We got a few interesting topics in local political news, and anytime there's Chicago politics involved, I go to my good friend Heather Sharon of thedailyline.net. Heather, thanks as always for joining us here, and last minute as always.
Happy to be here, John.
I guess I shouldn't put the cart before the horse here. Maybe it's just because I was on vacation for a week and a half. Do politics slow down here a little bit in August? I know nationally the House and Senate go on recess for a while. It seems like things go at a little slower pace.
Yes, they are supposed to anyway. The city council doesn't meet again until September 18th, which means there are no aldermen usually, you know, traipsing around City Hall, holding press conferences, that sort of thing. But since pretty much last Labor Day, when Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced that he wasn't going to run for a third term, we were just saying that it seems like it's been nonstop, breakneck pace, regardless of the season or the calendar, and that's proven true this week as well.
And I imagine that is partly the case, obviously, because we have a new mayor, and this is a year of firsts for her in every sense of the word. I mean, when you're talking about whether it's her first month, there's a review, whether, you know, people want to kind of take a stock of how well she's done in the first 90 days or whatever the case may end up being. I don't think we're there quite yet. But also her first summer facing Chicago violence, and that's, of course, been on top of her mind and all of ours as well.
That's right. In just a little while, she will hold a press conference where she will no doubt be asked about the violence this weekend. And it was the city's most violent weekend, which Ivanka Trump, special advisor to President Trump, just tweeted about a little while ago, again turning the national spotlight on Chicago's gun violence and gang violence.
Well, and you bring that up, and I imagine someone will ask her, because I think pretty famously Lori Lightfoot met with Ivanka Trump.
That's right. They shared a meeting at the White House and posed for a picture afterwards, which brought really condemnation for the then mayor-elect, who was accused of bolstering the president's daughter and special assistant.
Well, you can't say it, but I will. This host didn't care. I think it's good to get help from whoever you can get help from on a federal level, and to build bridges and relationships with whoever you can. But Heather, I won't let you say that, because I know that you're staying unbiased, of course, as you always do. Mayor Lightfoot reacted, of course, to the violence this weekend. And you know, this comes up, of course, after the shootings that happened in Ohio and Texas. Of course, of a different variety. Mass shootings have many different definitions of what they are or not. When you're talking about an accumulation of shootings, you know, it's covered differently. People react to it differently, of course, and that's for another day and time. But I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, while some people, you know, are upset with Ivanka Trump's tweet, because it sort of kind of made it seem like she was talking about one specific shooting as opposed to the accumulation, I mean, is it such a bad thing that we're all continuing to talk about the violence? At least it gets the conversation going. I'm sure we'd rather not be talking about it at all because we didn't have any, but, you know, putting a spotlight on these things, you know, it can be an impetus for change.
Right. I think the question is, are you talking about it because you're talking about the causes, and are you attempting to address those causes or otherwise find the solution, or are you engaging in what many people call whataboutism? You know, you say this happened, and the other person says, well, what about that? And all too often for the president, and you and I remember covering it together at DNA Info during the presidential election, that every time, you know, he would hold a rally or something, he would talk about the violence in Chicago, mm-hmm. and he was clearly using it to make a point to back then Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and also to criticize cities where, of course, the majority of the population, or at least a significant portion of the population, are Black and Latino. And we saw that, of course, happen again just several weeks ago, where the president targeted Baltimore Representative Elijah Cummings for the crime rate in Baltimore. So this is a really fraught history for really everyone in the Trump administration. And I think you're right that tweet from Ivanka Trump made it sound like it was one shooting, when, of course, it was several across a wide swath of the city, although concentrated, of course, on the south and the west side.
Yeah, that doesn't make it any worse or any better, certainly. But, yeah, it's important to be accurate about it. But you're right. It is a deflection. It's saying, oh, well, yeah, you're getting upset about these mass shootings happening in Texas and Ohio. Well, they're happening in Chicago every weekend. That's a conversation that can be had. But I don't think the point is, I think most people would say, well, why? There's no need to deflect. We can tackle both of these issues at the same time. And certainly one thing that has come up in this idea of trying to combat either mass shootings or things happening right here in our city, in our neighborhoods, is mental health issues. And I think one of the most famous decisions made by Mayor Emanuel and backed by the entire city council 8 years ago was the closing down of the mental health centers and in the city, about half of them, right, Heather?
That's right. So the city used to have 12 city-run mental health clinics. The mayor at the time, back in 2011, his first budget closed six of those clinics. Another one was closed after that. And really, the city changed the way that it provides mental health services. And that has been criticized to leading towards really a mental health crisis. And just before the mayor left office, the city council passed a resolution forming a task force to look at whether those clinics should be reopened. That task force was held a public hearing back in June, and they were supposed to release a report on whether those clinics should be reopened and basically how to pay for it. That report was due about 2 weeks ago, and I couldn't find any evidence that the report has been completed or even is in the works. So that's, I think, going to be a little disappointing for several rookie aldermen who campaigned on promises to reopen those clinics as part of this upcoming 2020 budget. So that will be a fight that will occur once aldermen return from their summer vacations.
At the Lawndale Christian Health Center, Mayor Lightfoot talked about these sorts of things. Can you explain maybe a little bit about her quote that she had about how initially there was this idea of rapid response in communities. Now we're trying to think of things in the resources of the community itself, the infrastructure there. Could you? I couldn't quite make sense of exactly what she was trying to get at.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of us on the City Hall beat were a little bit confused as well, because she didn't want to get into specifics saying that, you know, plans were being developed. But I think what she was getting at was that reopening these clinics or simply opening new clinics isn't going to be a panacea. That the city, especially on the south and the west side, there are children and young adults and adults who are exposed on a near daily basis to violence and trauma, and that has an impact on their mental health. So just reopening the clinics and then saying, woo, they're open, isn't really going to address those significant needs. So she's promised to take a different approach. What exactly that will look like, we're not clear. And how exactly she's going to pay for it, when we're looking at a budget deficit of somewhere in the neighborhood of $700 billion, is also a very significant question.
Certainly. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. If anyone isn't paying too much attention to what Mayor Lightfoot does, if they know one thing about her, I think the aldermanic pullback of privileges or how the planning operates in certain neighborhoods, that would be the one thing that people remember, or the spat with Alderman Burke. But the prerogative rollback, they actually had completed a study done by the mayor's office itself to kind of analyze how things have changed, even in the short period of time, in each individual department, right?
Right. So the mayor took office, and not even before the end of the day, she issued an executive order ending what she called aldermanic prerogative. And this was basically the alderman's ability to be the little mayor of his or her ward, that if there was a development that wanted to go through, they needed to sign off on it. If somebody wanted to get a new garbage cart, they had to go through their alderman's office. Now, all that has changed, and most of the changes have been concentrated in the Department of Planning and Development, as well as the Department of Housing. And two of the most significant changes that I found were that aldermen are no longer going to have to sign off on the creation of tax increment financing districts. And what's interesting about that is that those funds used to be spent wholly at the discretion of the aldermen. So I expect that there are several aldermen who are not really super happy about that.
Right.
And also, it will change the way affordable housing gets built in the city. It will no longer be up to the aldermen to decide whether projects can be basically exempted to some extent from the city's requirements and allowed to build affordable units off-site. So like with the Lincoln Yards development, most of those affordable units aren't going to be built as part of Lincoln Yards, but will be built elsewhere in the city. And that longer be at the discretion of aldermen. So those are some really big changes now in place.
So is this report mainly to see what will be happening as we go forward, or is this already what has changed immediately? I mean, where are we at in terms of this actually getting done, or the current realization of things?
Changes are in effect now, and okay. They basically impact licenses and permits issued by the city. Now, what this report doesn't cover and what's coming down the pike is changing to the city's zoning code. So those are the rules that determine whether you can build 6 apartments or 3 apartments on a given piece of land, and that's really where the heart of alderman's power lies. So if you have a piece of property and you want to build 6 units, but the current law only says you can build 3 units, that traditionally has been the call of aldermen. And to change that, the city is going to have to rewrite its zoning code almost entirely, and that is a huge, monumental undertaking, which is just now getting underway.
So reading through this report, there's some little interesting nuggets. I mean, I've always known that aldermen had control over some things, but I never quite realized how specific it is. I'm reading the Departments of Streets and Sanitation that aldermen can no longer order crews to remove 20 live trees per ward annually, a power that dates back to 1990. So aldermen had 20 that they could use each year?
Right, that's right. Now think about that. Like, let's say you're a homeowner and you've got a tree that's, you know, coming over your roof, and you're worried a windstorm's going to come and knock down that tree on your house and cause you thousands of dollars in repairs. You used to be able to call your alderman and say, hey, can you help me? And that alderman used to say, sure, I sure hope you remember that come the next
right.
election
I've got,
time.
I've only got 20 of these.
And I'm going to give one to you. I sure hope I can count on your vote. Right?
Oh, Chicago.
So that no longer exists. Aldermen are also really upset that they're no longer going to be able to deliver black garbage carts to their ward residents. So it used to be that if yours got stolen or damaged, you called your alderman and say, hey, I need a new garbage cart, and they would send the ward superintendent out with a new one. Now that request has to be centralized through City Hall, and it won't touch the alderman's office. Again, it removes another chance where an alderman can sort of provide a service directly to the voters that they hope will be remembered at election time.
Okay, zoning and permits and that sort of thing, that makes sense. I mean, the whole root of this is to try to end corruption, right? Or to try and limit corruption.
Correct.
What the heck corruption can be gotten from how many trees you put down or how many garbage cans you have? Because, yeah, the tree thing, it seems like a joke, but you're right. I mean, it seems like a funny line, like, oh, you only get so many trees. But, yeah, now you got to go all the way, what, through Streets and Sands if you have a tree problem? That could take forever.
Right. That is potentially the downside, and that will be something the mayor will be held to account for by the aldermen, because if their residents complain to them that they asked for a garbage cart but it didn't make its way through the Streets and Sands system, that's going to be an issue that she's going to have to address. But basically, this stems from the 14-count indictment against Alderman Ed Burke. He's pled not guilty. He says he will fight the charges, where he essentially is accused of holding up a permit for restaurant owners until they hired his private law firm. Under these changes, he wouldn't have been able to do that, because the permit would have been issued regardless of whether he signed off on it or not. So that's really what these changes are designed to address directly.
If you love this conversation, you'll love the dailyline.net conversations about Chicago, but also Springfield. Heather, I didn't prep you for this one, but our good friend Alex Nitkin wrote the article about the former mayoral candidate who owes her staff some wages, they say.
That's right. Almost $60,000 they say she didn't pay them for work during the last 2 weeks of the campaign. They have taken legal action to try to force her to pay them what they say they're owed. And they'd like an apology to boot.
Yeah, right, exactly. Everyone wants to be told they're sorry, or that the person's sorry. Okay, dailyline.net, I kind of gave you a rundown. Heather, what else should people know to expect there, and why they should sign up, get the emails, all that sort of stuff?
Well, if you want to know what you are getting for your tax dollars in Chicago and Cook County and Illinois, then the dailyline.net is designed to run that down for you, so you know exactly how to hold your public officials accountable.
Is it what's the, do you have a subscription-based model? How does that go?
Yes, so we're a subscription-based model because, as you know, John, it costs money to produce the news.
Sure does.
And you, But what we do also do is, if you want to get a little taste of what we do, we put out a free email also every morning, and you can sign up for that and sample the wares, as it were.
Absolutely. And also, I was looking through the newsletter that I got that you were kind enough to send me. I love how you guys give out a little love, too, to other interesting stories happening with other publications that do great work. And I think that's a really great thing about Chicago's news scene. I think that there's obviously competitive flair that goes on between reporters and neighborhoods and on beats. But at the end of the day, we're all trying to give good neighborhood strong news to people that want it. And it's great to give love to other folks like DNA Info and, of course, our staples, the Sun-Times and the Tribune. They do great work there, too.
They absolutely do. Yep, we do a roundup every day of the most important news in the city, the county, and the state. And we try to make sure that we give credit where credit is due. And here at City Hall, there are some days where there's so much news going on that we all operate on a system of co-opetition. Yeah. Cooperate where we can and compete where we want to.
Well, and you know, Heather, it's the same in radio and TV. You end up working for all the darn stations anyways at some point in your career.
That's true, right?
You end up just floating around everywhere. All right, Heather, thanks so much for joining us. Talk to you soon, okay?
Anytime, John. Thanks for having me.
Heather Sharon from thedailyline.net. Go there, really. Subscribe. It's a great site. I talk about Block Club Chicago a lot, and they're great, too. But, yeah, if you really want solid journalism, you want it every day, you're really in tune to what's happening, of course, you can get it here at WGNRadio.com with Steve Bertram. But, of course, get it online, too, at these great local news sites.